Hi, everybody. This is Phil the Issues Guy from issuesprogram.com and Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Do you like television? Do you like talking about television? Do you have problems and can't sleep at night? If you any of those things are true, come on down and join Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Phil's recap and review, or check out issuesprogram.com to check out our stuff. Basically, what we do is we talk a lot about television, some movies, but mainly television. We do post-episode recaps, live viewings, drunk commentary games, and just general analysis. So if you love television, you don't have a ton of people to talk about television, or you just cannot get enough of some of these awesome shows like Vikings, Better Call Saul, Westworld, Game of Thrones, even The Walking Dead, and some other random shows that just pop up here and there. If you cannot get enough of all those programs and you want to talk about them, jump on over, join in the live motherfucking chat with some of the best people in the world that all share their thoughts real time whenever we go live. So if you subscribe to the YouTube channel, you follow the YouTube channel by clicking that little bell thing, you can find out anytime we go live. You can also check out issuesprogram.com for a backload of all of our stuff and check out our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and lots of other places. Huge thanks to all of you, and hope you check it out and hope you enjoy it. And I'll talk to you guys next time.
Hello, bastards and wenches, and welcome to our PAX East 2019 one-on-one interview special. Now, in case you can't tell from the sound of my voice, I am still in recovery mode. But, you know, I just couldn't wait to share with you all these amazing interviews, 12 in total, that were conducted live on the floor of Boston's annual Penny Arcade Expo. We got the folks behind such anticipated titles as Samurai Showdown and Streets of Rage 4, as well as some neat indie darlings in the form of World of Horror and 3 Minutes to Midnight. We also chat with some cool people from the likes of Think Geek and our pals at Nerds Clothing, and so much more. Let's not delay any further. Let us dive into this PAX East 2019 interview one-on-one special. Coming to you from the Audio Technica booth, and I'm here with Bob representing Audio Technica. Welcome to Boston Bash Brigade. How are you doing today?
Doing great, thanks.
So tell us a little bit about Audio Technica.
So Audio Technica is a 57-year-old audio company.
Wow, that old?
Yeah, 1962. Started as a phonograph cartridge company for turntables and vinyl. Over the years, we've morphed into other categories such as headphones, microphones, you know, kind of transducer technology is where our expertise lies.
Nice. So how has Audio Technica evolved since, you know, starting to do headsets and gaming microphones and all that stuff?
So we have a lineage in transducer technology. So transducer basically means taking one form of energy to another form. So a microphone capsule, a driver for a headphone, even a cartridge phonograph is basically turning energy of one form to another. So it kind of lies in our DNA. And through the years, we've kind of morphed from consumer and to the pro side. So the microphone section, the headphone section, just because our expertise lies with those transducers, getting the gaming and the audio world is natural evolution for us. So
what are you showing up here at PAX East this year?
Most everything here is either gaming or content-created oriented. Mm-hmm. We have an array of gaming headphones or headsets. Yeah. We have some of our content creation packages now, which we're doing mics, headphones, and boom arms. We're also doing a lot of our, you know, wireless headphones because everybody listens to music or content now. So we have a vast array of consumer-friendly wireless headphones. And I think that's kind of what we got here, mostly headphone, microphone, and headsets.
So tell us a little bit about, like, the headsets for your casual gamer. Like, for someone who's looking into Audio Technica, yep, for the casual gamer, not someone who's, like, the hardcore gamer, what do you highly recommend for them?
Probably when it comes to our P-Series, but still very well built. You know, audio quality is kind of the utmost important for us. Mm-hmm. They're analog headphones, so we're not doing any surround sound with these currently right now, but they're just a very well-designed, comfortable, great mics, great sound effects, great presence when you're gaming.
All right, so let's crank it up a notch. What about for your hardcore gamer?
Hardcore gamer is going to our A-Series, so we get into a pretty pretty high-end headphone. It's based off of an audiophile line of headphones we have, so the detail, the transparency, the soundstage, very wide and enveloping as far as gaming. You get very good presence, hearing details, and the transients from all the different details of the game.
Yeah, so I was just testing out a couple of those headphones, trying out Overwatch in there, and I'm very impressed not just with the bass quality, but for how clear everything sounds, too.
Correct, yeah, so it is a full-range headphone. I mean, they are audiophiles, so high-res music actually sounds great on those things as well. So we're using a pretty tried-and-true design. It's a 53-millimeter driver on both of those headphones that you tested with a great mic setup. But, yeah, they are going to bring out the detail and the whole frequency range of audio.
On top of that, some fantastic noise cancellation as well.
Yep, isolation. So it's not really canceling, it's isolating.
Isolation. But what I like about that, and the one that I tried underneath there, which one was that one? The
this one here?
No. The ADG1X.
ADG1X is an open mic. So that basically means when you look at the headphone, the enclosure is kind of open. So there you do bring in some ambient noises, but it does give you a very wide soundstage.
And I feel like that one has like some of the best bass I've heard in a headset in a really long time.
One of our best sellers.
Now let's move on over to the microphones that you've got showing off over here. What can you tell us about this for our like podcasters, our live streamers? What do you have over here?
So we have a series of microphones. We have three of our best-selling microphones here today. We have a 2035, which is a condenser microphone, XLR output. We're also selling in a brand new, we call Content Streaming Pack. So it's been a new thing for us, but doing very well, where we actually bundle the microphone, the boom arm, and a pair of headphones. And it basically gives anybody who wants to start creating content a great path to get started.
Pretty much. And I was actually just testing out. Unfortunately, it's sold out here, but you were showing up the broadcast headset here, the BPHS1.
Yeah.
Wow. I was impressed with the quality of that.
Broadcast headset that people are using for content creation now. So it's a great setup with a mic, with an XLR output, and a quarter-inch audio adapter. Mm-hmm. So it's a cool little setup. Very popular with not only professional broadcasts, but people creating content in their homes.
Yeah, and I do want to go back to this one over here, the AT2035, I believe. And what I like about this one, because I was testing it out earlier, and how it takes out a lot of the emphasis of, like, loud consonants, like your pause and your buzz and everything, which is something that some of my listeners complain I do a little bit too much of.
So it's a condenser microphone, so it's a very, very high-end capsule for us, great for starting out. It does have a 80 hertz filter on it, as well as a 10 dB pad, so you're able to kind of get rid of some of the nuances of some of the noise and things like that in the environment.
Absolutely. So we're here at PAX East. Is there anything new that you're showing off at Audio-Technica?
Well, we have a brand new headphone based off of our M50X headphone, which is, this is the white version here, is kind of our best-selling headphone for studio monitors. We just released a wireless version of it. So the M50X BT is a wireless version of the tried-and-true studio headphone. So it's kind of a brand new one. We've only been selling for about 2 or 3 months now.
Awesome. Bob, so for information on Audio-Technica, where can our listeners find out more information?
www.audio-technica.com.
Bob, thank you so much for joining me here on Boston Best Brigade. Best of luck with the rest of PAX East.
Thanks, man.
Right now is Jan Serra, the creator of a brand new point-and-click adventure game called 3 Minutes to Midnight. Welcome to Boston Bass Brigade. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
So, you're a big lover of LucasArts games. I'm a big lover. So, what inspired you to finally go and create your own?
Well, as you said, I really like the old classic point-and-click games, the LucasArts mostly. And I also like TV shows like The X-Files, The Twilight Zone, this kind of mystery that has something more behind it, you know? So I wanted to make a video game. I was really decided to do that. And since I love the genre and it was something that we could manage to get the budget for, we went for a point-and-click adventure game. I wrote the story and it started to look really cool. We thought about the options, making a 3D game or something different, but no, we wanted a point-and-click. All my team is a big fans of the genre. Even my main artists love them. So you can tell that by the look of it.
Very cool. So tell us a little bit about the story. Like, what inspired the story for 3 Minutes to Midnight?
Okay, the story is set in the 1940s in the United States. in a little town in New Mexico, okay? The main character, Betty Anderson, will wake up one night with her memories wiped. And soon she will realize, as soon as she starts talking with the rest of the town, that nobody else remembers anything. Or at least that's what they tell her. And soon she will start unraveling things and discovering and getting farther in the plot. And at some point she will find out a secret military base that is not supposed to be next to the town. And from that point things will get crazier. So she will have to find out about this plot to extinguish humanity and stop it. I cannot tell you really more without spoiling the main thing.
Right. So it kind of has, like you said, X-Files with a little bit of Twin Peaks thrown into there.
A little bit. It's like if I had to tell you like four TV shows, it's like Twilight, Twin Peaks, X-Files, Stranger Things, even a little bit of Doctor Who, something like this. And those are the shows that inspired the story. And the kind of game, it's like Monkey Island, mainly Monkey Island 2. And we tried to do an updated version of the old classics, because the old classics were perfect like they were, but now people want things a little bit faster. So we implemented some things in the gameplay, like you can skip dialogue scenes, you can double click to jump scenes, these kind of things to make the experience more agile, more quick.
So what have been some of the challenges when it comes to bringing something new and fresh to the point-and-click adventure realm?
Well, first of all, we considered a lot of themes for the story, but you cannot make a pirate game, because even if you do something really cool, people will never love it as much as they love Monkey Island.
Right.
You cannot go inside a crazy house and do something, because there is Money Mansion. So it was really hard to find a theme that was not exploited in any way. So that's why the game is set in the 40s, and the main character is Betty, so he's not a pirate, he's not an explorer, he's just a teenager, she's in the wrong place at the wrong time, so kind of, you know, like John McClane in Die Hard is like this kind of thing, and yeah, basically this.
So what decided you to go to a more modernistic look of the game rather than something more pixel-based like we've seen with a lot of other titles?
Precisely because of that, I really like point-and-click adventure games. I play them all. But I think there is too many pixel art. And I personally like it for a while, but not for, like, not every single point-and-click game I play must be pixel art. So I really like nice graphics. It's one thing that technology allows you to make better. So for me, it was crucial point to get a good artist for the backgrounds and get these 4K graphics. Because I don't want to see not a single pixel in my game, you know?
You were talking about how it took, what, almost 3 weeks for some of the background art to be created for this game.
Yeah, some of the backgrounds that you've seen on this demo, it's only two of them. It's the campsite cabins and the lake. The lake took 3 weeks, and the cabins took 2 weeks. But we have some backgrounds that took like a month to paint, and those are like spectacular. We have very different locations. We have a plane crash, we have a military base, we have the inside of that military base, we have a mine inside that is insane what you will find there, and we have a farm, we have the whole town, the interiors of the town. It's we try to make that you don't get bored on this point and click, that you change locations a lot.
So you were telling me that this game's going to be almost completed around June, but before then, you're actually going to be launching a Kickstarter to bring something really cool to people who might be interested in reliving some of their LucasArts games. And you're showing this off right now at the PAX East booth, like old-school retro-style box art with hint guides and all these really cool things. So tell us a little bit more about this Kickstarter that you're hoping to launch soon.
Yeah, we want to make a Kickstarter trying to get... we have a lot of dialogue. We have a lot of voice acting. So most of them are freelancers. So we want to try to improve a little bit the voice acting of the game, and also try to get it to other languages by voice, because right now we only will have fully voiced in English. So that's what the Kickstarter is for. And the thing that we are going to be offering is, since it's a classic point-and-click adventure, like you said, we have all the classic stuff that it used to come with the old boxes. Mainly we have a box the same size as the Monkey Island box, so if you are a collector, you will love it because it will fit perfectly with the LucasArts one. And inside the hint book that will tell you how to go through the game, and also will tell you some things that you can try in the game that are just for fun, but maybe you are not going to see if you don't read them in the hint book. We also will have a comic book is the first one. Our intention is that with every new release of games we do, we will give a comic book telling a part of the story that is going only to explain in that little comic book. And then we also have, one of the important locations in this game is a diner. And the owner is kind of dirty guy, like he has a peculiar taste for dishes. So for example, I don't know, he makes these Rocky Mountain oysters, corn butter cougar marbles. We take the best of the cougar, its testicles, and we serve her with nice warm beer, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's a thing that disgusting things. So you can also have access to the whole menu. And everything is related to game, like a map, so you can see all the locations, with a sticker that will say secret until you unveil them, so it doesn't spoil it for you.
I know you can't do it now here at PAX East, but I think at any other future conventions that you're showing 3 minutes to midnight at, you should try to recreate these. Not like the real thing, but try to make it look like something that...
Like the big ones.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a good idea. We should put them in a shelf like this and show them, because there are some interesting stuff there.
All right. So my final question is, because hopefully later this year, 3 minutes to midnight will be released, why should our listeners check it out?
Well, because we put a lot of love and effort. We all love point-and-click adventure games, so we took care of everything that bothers us from other point-and-click games that they don't have into consideration. We've been working on it for 3 years. We polished every single detail of it, so you have fun the whole way through. And we created a story that is really interesting and that you will love. And basically that, because it's pure love put in a game, and I think people will love it as well.
Jan, thank you so much for joining me here on Boston Bash Brigade. 3 minutes to midnight, coming soon to PC and consoles. Please, please check out the Kickstarter when it goes live, because this is going to be a really fun title when it's finally released.
Thank you a lot. Thanks for having me, Evan.
I pull a mad scheme all around the north side. Chasing a sweet thing, so unsatisfied. Every time I try, crazy about a north side gal. I got some good talk, but not enough.
I'm here at the Arcade Crew booth, and I'm joined here with Bram of Turtle Blaze, showing off his new game, Kunai. Welcome to Boston Bash Brigade. How are you doing today?
Thank you. I'm doing excellent.
So tell me a little bit about Turtle Blaze.
Turtle Blaze is a three-guy studio based in The Hague. We want to make games that make the player feel awesome. So our first game was a mobile game called Road Warriors. It was a side-scrolling racing game with a lot of guns and explosions and stuff like that. And then we got the opportunity to make a second game. So we wanted this game to be on consoles. It's called Kunai. We want it to be big, have lots of explosions, lots of action.
So tell me a little bit about the inspiration behind Kunai.
It's actually, we drew inspiration from basically all the games that we love. So it's a Metroidvania. It has hints of Mario in it. It has hints of Super Meat Boy, hints of Celeste, hints of basically everything that we find interesting and cool. The weapons is a mixture of old Japanese weaponry, but also the P90 machine guns are in there. There's a rocket launcher in there, but also shurikens and of course kunai.
Yes, which you use to swing from left and right. And yes. So I take it there's a bit of a puzzle aspect or an acrobatic puzzle aspect to kunai that makes it a little bit more challenging.
Yes. We really wanted to focus on being a high mobile platformer. So you get the kunai pretty early on in the game, and then you can use them in various ways to move around the levels really, really fast.
So tell me a bit the story of Kunai. Like, what happens in this video game? Who is this little cute little character who's like a cross of BMO from Adventure Time and some Don Hertzfeldt character?
Yeah. So the main guy is called Tabby. It's a tablet with a cape and all the weaponry. He's actually so the game is set in a post-apocalyptic world. Humanity has almost been completely wiped out. There's this small resistance of some people, some robots, but basically you'll fight this megacorp existing of robots. And you actually are originated from one of their laboratories. You are the newest and latest in tech. And you're fighting this all these old old computers, so all the bad guys will have CRT monitors for faces and stuff like that.
So it's kind of like a an iPad or an iPhone brought to sentient life.
Yes, exactly. And it's fused with this old Japanese warrior soul. That's why you have all these handy ninja moves.
So do you learn a little bit about this Japanese soul as you progress through the game? Like, why is he trapped in there? Or who was he before he became Tabby?
I'm not sure if I can go into any details about that.
Oh, okay.
Just yet.
All right. Yeah. Fair enough. No spoilers. I know this will be a spoiler-free sort of podcast show. Yeah. How does Tabby evolve as the game progresses?
Well, of course, he learns about why he's put into the world in the first place. I mean, at the beginning of the game, you start off in this birth pod, and you where you break out of.
Yes.
But the birth pod actually belongs to the evil corporation. So you are part of the evil corporation, right?
So
they break you out, and further along in the game, you learn about your purpose.
Is there an aspect of this game that changes depending on how you play it?
I don't think so. It'll be pretty much a stand-up Metroidvania where you start up with nothing, and then we show you all these places. There's a lot of places where you can't go yet. Then you'll get these upgrades, weapons and stuff, and then you'll be able to reach them. But the story is we have a story to tell, and we're telling it through the gameplay.
Excellent. So do we have a release date yet for Kunai?
Nope. Of course not.
But you know which consoles it'll be on, right?
Right of now, it's going to be on PC and Nintendo Switch.
Okay, terrific. Where can people find out information on Kunai?
You can go to kunaigame.com. We have a Discord that you can join, twitter.com/turtleblaze.
Awesome. Bram, thank you so much for joining me here on B3 Crew. Kunai coming soon to consoles and PC. And I hope you have a fantastic PAX East.
Thank you, Cynthia.
Yashar from OvidWorks, who is showing me the video game Metamorphosis. Welcome to Boston Bash Brigade. How are you doing today?
Hi, good, thanks. It's great to be here.
So tell me a little bit about OvidWorks.
OvidWorks is a company that was started in 2016 by a group of people who really wanted to make engaging games with fun moment-to-moment gameplay and deep stories.
Now, Metamorphosis is, of course, based on the influential story by Franz Kafka. What made his original tale a good concept for a video game?
A big reason is our game director is a huge fan of Kafka and knows his work intimately. Mm-hmm. And I know that he considers Kafka as a sort of a literary game designer. And the idea of bringing that into video games was appealing for the story reasons, but also for the gameplay reasons, because when we experimented with the perspective and playing as an insect, we managed to build really interesting and fun level designs and mechanics around it. And so we knew we wanted to make that game, and with the interest of Kafka and the game designer, it just was natural to combine those things.
So would you say this is a true adaptation of his tale, or would you say there are some liberties that you threw into it?
I would say it's inspired by the weirdness and surrealism of Kafka, but it's not an adaptation, no.
Okay. So for our listeners, how would you describe the gameplay in Metamorphosis?
The gameplay, we call it a puzzle platforming adventure game. It is a mystery where you're trying to solve what happened to you and you're following the narrative. The gameplay is... It's about getting, like, navigating spaces, finding a way from point A to point B, and to do that, we give you certain mechanics, like an overview that lets you see the greater picture. You have mechanics of climbing that lets you climb any surface using liquids, that you can spit and create really interesting vertical jumps and leaps, and that allows us to build really vertical level designs. So it's a really unique thing that you don't really find anywhere else.
Now, I find it really interesting that you get to find out how you transformed into this bug, because you don't even know how that happens in the original story. So was there a challenge as to, like, how to create a concept as to why this happened to him?
I don't want to spoil the ending.
Oh, no, of course not.
But I can tell you that it's not as straightforward as you suggested.
Right, and totally understandable. So, within the story of Metamorphosis, you do find, you know, you do see the perspective of the guy's, you know, family and how they treat him. Do you come across this in this video game?
I would say, again, it's more inspired by the works of Kafka, and it takes not only elements from Metamorphosis, but also, for instance, the trial, because Joseph is also a character in the game, and he's going through his process, and you're trying to help him. As well as trying to find out what happened to yourself. And there's elements of the castle, because the luring point of the game is something called the tower, which is drawing you towards it. So all of these things combine together to give a sort of, we want to bring the themes of existentialist 20th century literature without necessarily straight up adapting any one work.
But at the same time, it feels like that you're trying to connect all the universes in Kafka into one game.
I think what we're trying to do is make an interesting story and an interesting game that has inspirations from Kafka, but also from other works of literature. So we believe that, like, players beyond, like, what ideally what we would like is that beyond just having a good moment-to-moment gameplay, the players have an emotional reaction to the themes of the game and the story of the game. It's an entertaining story, but ideally at the end of it, there's an emotional impact. And really, that's what we want to convey. Like, we didn't set out to, let's, like, one-to-one adapt something. That's not what we ever try to do. We want to take inspirations from things that mean something to us, but then on our own, create something that would mean something to other people.
And you seem to be doing a great job with this, considering you won a couple of awards for this at GDC.
Well, not awards.
For publishers.
Right.
Not publishers, the publications, I meant to say.
Right. I wouldn't call it an award, but we did make GameSpot's best, I think, best 15 games of GDC, and also Game Informer thought we were one of the best indie games of GDC. Those are not awards, though, but we're really happy that people recognize what we're doing, and ultimately we would like, you know, people to play it, and so it's even more rewarding to be here at PAX and to see people come up, play, have fun with the game. Like, you know, we learn a lot as well. We're here with the alpha, taking, you know, talking to people, getting suggestions, and then seeing people enjoy the experience. That's what's rewarding.
So the feedback here at PAX East, how has it been? Have a lot of people really grown attached to Metamorphosis?
It's been great. I would sum it up in one word. People like it, and that's rewarding. Standing here, watching people play it and talk among each other, you know, have fun with it. That's why we're here.
Absolutely. And you have announced that you're going to be releasing it on PC and all the consoles. Do you have a set release date yet?
We're saying fall 2019, so after the summer. I don't want to go more specific than that.
Yeah, that's fine. So, for more information, where can people find out about Metamorphosis?
I would say, first and foremost, wishlist us on Steam. That helps us out a lot. And we will post everything, every update on Steam. But our Twitter is maybe also the second best place to follow us. That's @OvidWorks.
Excellent. Yashar, thank you so much for joining me here on B3. Metamorphosis coming later this year on PC and consoles. And as a fan of Kafka, as a fan of Metamorphosis, I'm very impressed with what I've seen so far.
Thank you so much.
You were looking for me, dear, down by the sea. You found some little silver fish, but you didn't find me. I was hiding, dear, hiding all the way. I was hiding, dear, I was hiding all the way. You went to the museum and you climbed a spiral stair.
You know, folks, when it comes to awesome geek stuff, nobody does it better than ThinkGeek. And I am here with Erica from ThinkGeek. Welcome to Boston Bash Brigade. How are you doing today?
Man, living the dream.
So how has PAX East been? I know we're just a couple hours into the convention. So how has the crowd been?
You know what? The crowd's been great. I've had a lot of... This is my first PAX show.
Really?
So I'm really excited to be here. Everyone's been super friendly. You know, people at a show, like, that we're all having fun. We all love this stuff, and we're just happy to be here.
Get comfortable, because it gets a little bit crazy after the next couple of days.
Exactly. Yeah.
Absolutely. So you're off showing here new things here over at the ThinkGeek booth. One of the things that I'm very excited about is that you're showing off vinyl records.
Yes.
And I'm a sucker when it comes to vinyl record collecting.
Yeah, so we've got some really great exclusive vinyls. I don't know if you saw, but we've got that Witcher LP.
Four records.
Four beautiful blood red LPs in that package. $55, ThinkGeek exclusive. You're not getting that anywhere else. We've got Undertale, we've got Resident Evil, Nathan Drake. We've got some really beautiful vinyls here. And I think, you know, it's not just that people love music on vinyl now, but also like the fact that these games have amazing soundtracks.
Absolutely.
Things that you put on, like there's great mood music. So like, why wouldn't you put that on a vinyl that reflects, you know, those fans?
You know, it's coming to a point where like video game soundtracks are like, you can play in the background, no one will know it's a video game soundtrack, they'll just think, oh, it's just great music.
Yeah, and you've got big names, like big-time composers that are doing things, and so why wouldn't you want to listen to that stuff over and over?
So I know you were just talking about a few that you have. Are there any upcoming ones that you'll be able to reveal here on B3?
I would love to reveal some stuff that we're working on, but they would cart me away and you'd never see me again. We've got some cool things in the works.
All right, so besides that, you also have, I believe, the Modern Heroes line of figurines.
Modern Icons, yeah, the Modern Icons.
Modern Icons,
yeah, those are exclusive to us here at ThinkGeek, and we've got some really great figures. We've got two new here at the show. We've got the Modern Icons number 8 Fallout Vault Girl and Modern's Icons number 7 the Fallout T-51 Power Armor. Beautiful statues, like a great level of detail, and the thing that's awesome about them, $50 price point.
And I personally got to see it up close and personal, and the attention to detail on these things is amazing.
Yeah. And beautiful packaging, too, right? So, like, I mean, the kind of thing that you would display alongside the figure itself. So, what's like, if you're kind of on the fence about getting into that collectible statue, like, I think this is a really nice line to kind of dip the toe in the water.
Absolutely. And what I like about it, too, is you're showcasing some of the strong women in gaming as well.
Yeah, we've got one. She's been around for a little while, but we've got, from the Elder Scroll, we got the Skyrim female Dragonborn. So, also $50. Really great detail.
Again, amazing detail, especially with the dragon tail.
Yes. It's a beautiful piece. So, you know, you guys should check it out. The other thing is that, you know, ThinkGeek is going into our 20th year. You know, we've been around. We're kind of the OG in this space.
That's amazing. You guys have been around for 20 years.
Yeah, and so, like, for us, like, we're really recommitting to our fans about bringing this quality product at great prices and listening to you guys and hearing what it is that you guys are looking for and how we can deliver that to you.
All right, so from the feedback, what has been some of the things that you've been hearing from the fans of saying what they would love to have?
So, you know, we are really looking at the anime space because people, like, anime's huge. Like, and you can't, yeah. So you can't get away from that. So we're looking at things, how we can talk about that. We've got some really great apparel with the anime. So, you know, we've got that on our website and in our stores. That's right. We have physical stores, so you guys should check those out.
There's actually one right by my house.
Yeah, there's two here, yeah, in the Boston area. There's one in Braintree and there's one in Peabody.
Yeah, that's the one by my house.
Yeah. And so, yeah, so, I mean, and, like, if you look at the Fallout stuff, like, beyond just the Modern Icon statue, we've got this Super Sledgehammer, right? And that's, like, a beautiful piece, not just for, like, a Fallout collector or Fallout fan. If you're cosplaying, it's lightweight, it's not going to be weighing you down, it's already ready, it's really got a good quality to it, a good price.
Gives you one less thing to worry about building. I mean, think of, like, all the hours that they work on the costume itself. Okay, now I got to do the weapon. Oh, never mind, they actually just sell it.
We already got it, yeah.
So, for ThinkGeek, celebrating its 20th anniversary, what sort of big thing are you going to do for ThinkGeek?
We're going to really truly celebrate it in August, which is our 20th anniversary. We're going to celebrate it in the stores, we're going to celebrate it in the website. So stay tuned for those details. We're looking on, you know, some really great things that we can bring out for the fans that have been with us, for our new fans as well. So, you know, it's just going to be a celebration because you agree, like, there's never been a better time to be a fan or to be a geek than right now.
Absolutely, because we were just talking about anime. Anime has become a part of the mainstream entertainment scene in ways that we never thought it would.
I was walking around a theme park last week, and I mean, couldn't get 20 feet without seeing a Dragon Ball t-shirt.
Absolutely. I mean, that's one franchise that's grown big. Right now, we've got stuff like Konosuba. We have The Promised Neverland. We have series that people, like, 5 years ago would never have thought have been, like, really big and have become super popular.
Yeah, and legacy series, too. Like, Cowboy Bebop. You've only got one season of that show, but it continues to resonate. You're going to see the show on Netflix soon. So, like, people are finding out that, hey, these are really great stories. They're just being told in different ways. And so I think, again, becoming more mainstream. The best time to be a geek right now.
Not to mention the reintroduction of Evangelion coming onto Netflix in June.
Yes, yeah, so really exciting.
So, Erica, for our listeners, like, where can they find all the most updated information on ThinkGeek?
So follow us on our social channels. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at ThinkGeek, all one word. ThinkGeek.com for the website, and that also will get you in touch with the stores.
Erica, thank you so much for joining me here on B3 ThinkGeek. You guys always impress me. I can't believe how huge you just made the piranha plant one.
I know, that goes all the way up to your shoulder. It's
I know. It's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. It's going to be like Audrey 2.
It's going to be a full suit. It's going to be a full suit.
Erica, thank you once again.
Evan, thank you so much.
Little Red Riding Hood was in good with the food distribution by her own volition, choosing to sincerely deliver to old folks sucker. Also bigger, cheese and crackers, salt and coffee, medicine to make the heart beat softy, awfully kind in a mission. Red was yes in a head-on collision with the forces of trouble, long is the tooth plus stubble, and this feels double for all little
folks. I am so excited because I just played Streets of Rage 4, and I'm here with Sivilio, one of the developers of the game. Welcome to Boston Bass Brigade. How are you doing today?
Fine, thank you. It's been a tremendous day on the reception of Streets of Rage 4.
So, people have been waiting a really long time for Streets of Rage to come back. What made you convince Sega to bring it back?
But it's not me that convinced them. It's Dotemu and Lizard Cube. Yeah. It's Ben Fickett, the art director of the game. So after doing Wonder Boy, there was a very good relationship between Dotemu, Lizard Cube, and Sega. And so Ben did some artworks to propose to do Streets of Rage 4, and Sega accepted because of course we want to do Streets of Rage 4. And so because at God Crush we did Streets of Fury before, another beat them up. We embarked on the project, and that's it. It's been more than 1 year, and we worked on Streets of Rage 4, and we're delighted to be able to work on this great franchise.
And everyone is so stoked. The big reveal, like a few months back, everyone just went nuts over it. And playing it right now here at PAX East, man, you got it. You got the true spirit of Streets of Rage in this thing.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about the lore, like, of Streets of Rage 4. Like, how does this fit into the main storyline of the game?
So it's 10 years later, and I think that's all I can say. Maybe, Jordi, you can say more?
Well, not much. I mean, it fits in the same city, a few years after. And we will discover what happened after Mr. X's death.
Developing Streets of Rage for a new era, like, how has the gameplay itself evolved since the days of Sega Genesis?
So we started from, really, it's a spiritual successor to Streets of Rage 2. So we wanted to keep this a little bit slower, deliberate gameplay where placement is very important, where every decision counts. So we started from Streets of Rage 2, and we kind of copied it. But then we tried to solve some stuff or to evolve it in some way. So, for example, now the game is 16x9, so you have more play area. We added some moves, so you have an air special now. You have a star move. You can pick up stars and get a star move. And also, enemies are blocked by the side of the screen. So all that, am I forgetting something? You can...
Special moves, maybe. Maybe the special move, it used to deplete your life. We kept that,
but now you can regain the life depleted by eating the enemies. But if you're hit, you will lose all that.
Yeah, I noticed that happened to me while I was playing.
Yeah, so that was two really big points we wanted to improve the side of the screen, because in the original games you were sometimes punching people not in the screen, and I think that was frustrating.
I can imagine.
And but also we improved the weapon system a lot. So you can now, there is a dedicated button to pick up the weapon, so there's no conflict between hitting enemies and picking up the weapon. And now, you know, more move. You can, of course, throw the weapon, but then you can catch it in the air. And we wanted to bring the weapon system a step further.
So, this is day one of PAX East. A lot of people seem very excited. How has feedback been for Streets of Rage 4?
Tremendous. Really very, very good for now.
Great.
People like it. What's very flattering is that it really reminds people of the original. People, when they play it, they really feel, okay, it's not a treason to the feeling of the original, but it's a four. So we're very flattered that people react that well to the game.
So, do you have a release window for Streets of Rage 4? Any announcements yet regarding that?
No announcement yet. We're not ready to say when it will come out.
I gotta say, so far, just from this demo alone, you got something special, and a lot of people have been waiting for Streets of Rage. I can tell you, as someone who's been waiting a really long time, this has been truly worth the wait.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. And for more information, where can people find out all about Streets of Rage 4?
You can go on the website streetsforrage.com.
Excellent. Guys, thank you once again. Best of luck at PAX East. Seriously, this was a blast to play.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Thank you.
2,000 on thermometers, 2,000 surrounding us. Travel 2,000 kilometers to hang out with us. What's up, danger? What's up, danger? Hey, didn't know they doubted us. Makes it that more marvelous. Sign them up because I'm in this vibe and I guess anonymous. What's up, danger? Hey, don't be a stranger. Because I like high chances that I might lose.
I'm coming to you from the Isbrid Games booth, where I just tried out World of Horror. I'm here with Bavo, the creator of the game. Welcome to Boston Master Brigade. How are you doing today?
Yeah, pretty good. Thank you so much.
So here's one thing that I'm really impressed about this game is you created all of it on Microsoft Paint. So what was the challenge of creating a game using such an archaic fashion?
I actually think, you know, the restriction of the program, the Microsoft Paint, is forcing you to get creative with it. So in a way, it helps a lot.
So, tell me a little bit about the inspiration behind the World of Horror. Like, where did you come up with the idea for this game?
Well, the game is a love letter to all the things that I admire, one of them being a Japanese author, Junji Ito. But there's also some H.P. Lovecraft, some body horror like John Carpenter's The Thing, some straight-to-video trash from the 90s. All the thing I love.
I'm really happy you mentioned Junji Ito, because that was the very first thing I thought of when I started seeing some of those creatures. So how does the works of Junji Ito shape your imagination? How does it shape your own creativity?
I know, Junji Ito, like, I know it's sad, he's like his own spin on the cosmic horror shows. Like, it's not only H.P. Lovecraft out there, and you can have your own thing, be there, and it's really great, be unique in a way.
So tell me about the story of World of Horror. So what's going on for our listeners to know what happens when they dive into the game?
So we play as one of the villagers living in a seaside town in the late 80s in Japan. And underneath the town, there's an old god that's slowly awakening. And we as the players are trying to save ourselves and our friends while solving different mysteries around the city.
So tell me a little bit about this demo. So you're in a school, you're trying to figure out what's going on, and there's this woman with scissors.
Oh yeah, that's right. The demo was taken straight from the main game. It's put somewhere in the middle. We are trying to save a friend who summoned a living urban legend, the Scissor Lady.
So I noticed that while playing the game, there would, like, depending on what ending you get, ending A, ending B, ending C. So does that mean the story is going to change every time you play it?
Yeah, exactly. Each time you play, you discover new stuff. You'll see new enemies, new monsters. And each mystery has its own endings.
So, you're here at PAX East. I noticed that you won Best in Show. Someone gave you actually Best in Show of this, so congratulations on that. Personally, I think it was one of the coolest, most unique kind of RPG titles I've seen here at PAX East. So, how do you feel about the feedback that you've been getting here at the PAX East?
People seem to love it. I have no idea why.
Do you have a release date for World of Horror?
Officially, it's coming soon.
So, PC only, or are you going for consoles?
We are going PC, PlayStation 4, and Nintendo Switch.
Terrific. Thank you so much for joining me here on Boston Ambassador Brigade. Where can more people find out information on World of Horror?
You can follow me on Twitter at Panstash, which we'll probably won't be able to find because it's Polish.
Don't worry. I think you'll still find it.
Yeah.
But thank you very much, and I hope you have a great PAX East. Folks, I'm here at the D3 publishing booth, and I just tried out the latest Earth Defense Force game, Earth Defense Force Iron Rain, and I am here with one of the masterminds behind the series, Nobuyuki Okajima. Welcome to Boston Bash Brigade. So first off, this game is wild. This is super crazy. So how challenging is it to keep one-upping yourself each time with every single Earth Defense Force title?
まあ、もともと巨大な宇宙からの敵生物がやってきて、それを生身の人間が倒していくというコンセプトのゲームですので、いつもいつもクレイジーというよりも最初からクレイジーなので、そのコンセプト
itself is crazy from the beginning because the gigantic monsters coming from the space and the human as a bare hand has to fight with them. So the concept is very crazy and wild from the beginning.
Absolutely, and that's one of the biggest draws of Earth Defense Force, just how super insane of a series it is. And, you know, I've been following for the past few years, probably since the beginning, and what I like about it is how much the gameplay has evolved ever since the first one. So can you talk about how challenging it was to evolve for this latest title?
はい。今回展示しているのはアースデフェンスフォースアイアンレインというタイトルなんですけども、これはこれまでサンドロットが開発してきたナンバリングのEDFとは異なるコンセプトを持った新しいEDFです。So
this time we bring the Earth Defense Force, the Iron Rain. It is different from the traditional numbering EDF developed by Sandlot.
ナンバリングのEDFは日本では絶大な人気がありまして、ワールドワイドでもコアユーザーを中心に多くの支持をいただいているんですが、どうしてもカルトメジャーというような立ち位置にあると思います。そこをブレイクするすべく欧米のユーザーたちに受け入れるEDFを作ろうということで作ったのが今回のアイアンレインです。
Because the EDF numbering series is very popular in Japan, but in the worldwide, it's considered somewhat like a cult major, like a between cult and major. So we wanted to break through. We wanted to hit the major market in the Western market. That's why we made the Iron Rain.
So would you say that this one is more for someone, well, not just for newcomers to Earth Defense Force, but also for those who have been playing it for a very long time?
Exactly like that.
So, where would you say Iron Rain? Where would you say the biggest inspiration for this title came for you guys?
それはね、ネタバレになってしまうので言えないんですけれども、ゲームの中身に関係していて、鉄の雨ですよね。響きが良かったのでサブタイトルとして付けました。
So if I talk too much, it's gonna be the I'm disclosing the secret of the game. So if you play it, it's somewhat related in the game contents, but it's the Iron Rain sounds very good the phonetically. That's why we made it.
All right. So what I like about Earth Defense Force, especially what I just noticed here in Iron Rain, is there is a strategy when it comes to taking down, you know, the big spiders, the big aliens, the big robots. And one of the things that I just realized here, too, is that even though you may have powerful weapons, those are normally not the best ones to go. Bigger doesn't mean better. Bigger is just bigger. So my question for you is, how challenging was it to create different strategies for the players to experience in Earth Defense Force Iron Rain?
まあ、苦労したのは私というよりも、今回 Iron Rain を開発した UX のクリエイターたちが一番苦労したと思うんですが、ナンバリング EDF というですね、すでに人気のコンテンツがあって、それを、ターゲットは異なる、まあ、ターゲットとするエンドユーザーは少し異なるんですけれども、そういうメジャーなタイトルの別のものを作るという難しさというのは、私はもちろんですけど、UX のクリエイターたちにはすごくプレッシャーがあったと思います。
So both me and the UX, the creator, that the UX, the developer, I think we felt the pressure because numbering series, this is very popular, well-known game, and we have to take this tradition, and yet we have to make a very different thing.
Now, correct me wrong, this game is already on Japan, correct?
Oh, yeah, yeah. 4月11日に、worldwide 同時発売。
It's not in Japan yet.
Oh, so okay. So you haven't. So all right. I was curious because I wasn't too sure if there has been like any feedback from the Japanese players compared to the American.
Japanese user もまだ遊んでないんです。
So the Japanese user has not seen yet.
All right. So my question then is, from your perspective of seeing, you know, the American players here demoing it to maybe Japanese players playing it in your home country, what has been sort of the feedback compared to the two different audiences?
ですね、一番日本のユーザーはからはですね、結構ポジティブな意見をいただいてます。ナンバリング EDF とは似てるけれども確かに違うてるでもちゃんと EDF ゲームになっているということでは日本の評価という声が日本のユーザーは一番多いです、はい、
And the Japanese user that we got very positive feedbacks like it's very cool, similar to the EDF it's different but it's still in the tradition of the EDF and it's very highly valued by Japanese customers
で欧米のユーザーからですね一番よく聞かれるのが、ナンバリング EDF はなくなってしまってこのアイアンレインに置き換わるんじゃないかっていうような質問をよくいただきますがそれは違いますとナンバリングはナンバリングでこれからも続けていきますしアイアンレインはブランニューのタイトルとしてこれからナンバリングを重ねていければいいなと思っています
The most of the questions we got from the Western users, they are worrying about so much that they're going to be replaced. Their numbering series is going to be end and switch to the Iron Rain, but it's not. The numbering series continues as is, 6 and 7, and Iron Rain, if user like it, it continues to the Iron Rain.
Okay, so you would consider this more as a spin-off series rather than the part of the original numbered series?
スピンオフっていうと原作ありきでそこから裏では何が起こってたのかっていうのがよくスピンオフと言われると思うんですけどそうではなくてアナザー EDF なんですねもまオールニューアナザー EDF だ
It's actually a brand new another EDF rather than the spin-off. Spin-off is, I feel like it's like more background story.
Yeah. No, I totally understand. Okay, that's fairly understandable. But we are coming very close to the launch of the game in just a couple of weeks. So for my listeners, I want you to tell them why should they play Earth Defense Force Iron Rain?
欧米のユーザーに EDF ゲームの地球を防衛する楽しみをもっと多くの方に知ってもらいたくて、EDF アイアンレインを作りました。EDF というゲームを聞いたことはあるけれども、カルトゲームだということで、遊んでなかった人たちにはぜひこの機会にアイアンレインに触れてほしいと思います。皆さんが知っている街、で、巨大なエイリアンと戦うのはとてもエキサイトだと僕は思いますよ。
We made the Iron Rain because we want to, Western user to know more about the EDF. So if you heard about the EDF but you never played because you saw that the cult game, this is your time to enlist. I think you're going to be very excited protecting the town that you know.
Okajima-san, arigato gozaimasu. Earth Defense Force, Iron Rain in stores April 11th. This is a wild game. You are all going to love it. As always, I'm here at PAX East at the Nobody Ever Respects Dork Society booth. I'm here with Eric, the mastermind of the whole thing. How are you doing today?
Good. How about yourself, man?
I am doing great. I know this is day one. How's it been so far at Nerds Clothing?
Not bad. You know, seeing a lot of, old customers come back, seeing what we have. Got some new products here. So just seeing, how things go.
Yeah, let's talk about the new things that you got.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So, we're still doing stuff with WWE. That's been going strong. We introduced a new line called the Neon Line to them. So we're doing that. We got some jackets now. We're making jackets.
Yes, finally! You got the jacket!
Yes, we got new jackets here. We're expanding into that. Possibly, working with new video game companies. Maybe with Street Fighter. Capcom's in the mix. Some old IPs as well. Like, we're trying to get Felix the Cat and everything. Just expanding.
Yes, I heard Nerds. About the Felix the Cat thing.
Yeah, man, it's just expanding what Nerds is all about. You know what I mean? Like, Nerds is more than video games. It's cartoons. It's nostalgia. It's all that stuff. So that's where we're at right now.
You know, Greg and I were talking about, like, the whole Felix the Cat thing.
Uh-huh. Yeah, dude.
And how you might be doing a, like, sort of Hello Kitty version of Felix the Cat.
We're trying to, we're trying to do, mix it up a little bit. Because, a lot of companies work with IPs and it's always the same stuff. There's no really much creativity to it or any parody to it. So we're trying to switch things up to,
I will say, if you try to do that, man, over in Japan, Felix the Cat is huge. It would sell like crazy.
I would love to get some of the stuff over there in Japan, man. So if you have any connects, you let
me
know.
I might.
Yeah, dude. Absolutely, man.
So out of all of that, like, what are you most proud of when it comes to the new stuff that you're showcasing?
I'm just proud of everything, you know what I mean? It's been a struggle to make a brand and kick it off by yourself, and then now I have good friends around me to help me, and doing stuff with WWE, it's a great check mark on your portfolio, and that could just grow into other things, and that's what I'm hoping in the future.
Yeah, you already mentioned possibly working with Capcom, a few other companies.
Yeah,
it
absolutely.
Could be big things.
It is, hopefully, and we might talk to our buddies over here about Toe Jam and Earl, and they're interested in working together too.
That would be fantastic.
You never know.
Nerds Clothing, Toe Jam and Earl, I think that's a perfect fit right there.
Absolutely, sir. That's where we're at right now.
So, with Nerds Clothing, like, I know you're showing off a lot of new stuff, and I know we're talking about some possible connections here and there. What's something that you are working on right now that you are very ecstatic to be showcasing?
Right now, we're just working on securing that Capcom deal. So I've been doing a lot of, test shirts, test designs, test styles to see if something catches their attention to where they'll pull the trigger and say, okay, let's do this, let's see where this goes, you know?
You know, I think a good recommendation for you to reach out to is Angry Joe, because he's doing all the Street Fighter board game stuff.
Hey, man, if send him our way. You're the man with the connects, man.
Possibly. So, Eric, thank you once again for joining me here on One-on-One Nerds Clothing. Where can people check out your stuff?
Always, man. It's www.nerdsclothing.com. Instagram is nerds_clothing. Twitter is @nerdsclothingco. And that's it. I'm a friendly guy. Send us a message.
Eric, thank you once again. Best of luck with the rest of the PAX East, and I hope you have a blast this year.
Hey, buddy. Thank you, man.
Old enough, bold enough, man up, woman up. Think you had enough? What you know about? Whatever you know about. Question is, can you get it out? Spoke, stay woke, gun culture silence. Stop the violence, made all the brilliant silent. World ain't gonna fix itself. World ain't gonna change itself. Run your mouth, don't be dumb, but bump them gums. I know the insecure, be sure that the adversary.
China Zero, one badass little game that's being showcased at Devolver Digital. I'm here with the mastermind behind the game. Damon Justin. Welcome to Boston Bash Brigade. How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing very well. So first off, tell us a little bit about the inspiration behind Katana Zero.
So mostly movies, honestly. Korean revenge thrillers, specifically Old Boy and The Man from Nowhere. The aesthetics of Drive. Just, you know, games that have super punchy, kinetic, one-hit kill, just, I don't know, satisfying combat games, you know?
So I know there is a lot of hack and slash games, kind of a little bit similar to Katana Zero, but what makes Katana Zero different from everybody else?
Well, I like to think that the kinetic gameplay in Katana Zero is really top-notch already. There's the whole mechanics of being able to focus and slow down time, but I think what really pushes it over the edge is the narrative. I mean, it's such a flashy game on top, but on the bottom there's so much depth that most players wouldn't really see, because they'd expect like a game like this to be, you know, a lot more surface level combat. But it's really, there's a huge focus on narrative, there's a huge focus on branching paths and dialogue choices, and just really sucking you into the story and making it feel like the combat is happening for the story and not two separate things.
So yeah, as we see with the character, he is actually in therapy, and you know, he's talking with his therapist about this recurring dream about this dark figure that appears. How is this connected to what happens in the game itself?
That's a hard question to answer without being incredibly spoiler heavy.
Okay.
But it is something that will be revealed slowly throughout the game. It is a noir game, so I mean, everything is riddled with intrigue, and it's all about trying to figure out the mysteries of everyone's motivations and your own past and everything together. So I guess I couldn't really comment on that without spoilers.
Which is understandable. And yeah. I appreciate you not spoiling anything for our listeners. One question I noticed is when you are going back and forth, there is this option of trying to skip the dialogue, but it feels like that may punish you later on.
So it's not necessarily just a punishment. I mean, it's a full gameplay mechanic in itself. For the people listening who don't know about the mechanic, the dialogue works in this way. There's a limited amount of time to respond to dialogue, sort of like a Telltale Games game. However, on top of that, you're given the option to interrupt people as they're speaking. And that option has several ramifications through the entire game, as every choice you make in the dialogue really has ripple effects through the entire story. But specifically, the skip feature... the interrupt feature works partially as a skip button, because as you interrupt people, you're insulting them, you're interrupting them, and they're starting to get upset, and they won't want to talk to you anymore, which will be a really quick way to get through dialogue sequences that you don't care about and get into the gameplay if that's what you're into. However, it does have several other implications, because it affects your relationship with characters. For instance, on the second level of the game, which is a hotel, there's a receptionist, and if you keep interrupting her and insulting her, then you won't be able to give her an alibi. And at the end of the level, you'll return to the hotel desk, and there will be cops around because of all the violence that's been going on in the hotel.
Yeah.
And if you were unable to give her an alibi because you kept interrupting her, then you have no way to talk your way out of the situation you have to fight your way out. So all these little things kind of fall together into a very deep, tailored experience for that specific player.
So someone who could seemingly be an enemy could wind up being a friend if you answer correctly.
Correct, yeah. And there are other segments where you will have to interrupt people in order to continue. For instance, like maybe some bad guy's giving you a speech and you have to keep interrupting him to make him mad enough that he won't kill you and he'll do something else. So, I mean, there's a whole birth of different ways that the interrupt feature can be used.
Right, so there are good aspects of the interrupt feature, but then there's also bad aspects of the interrupt feature.
Yeah, I mean, it's a meaningful way to skip through dialogue, which is something that I feel like more games should have, honestly. And it also has another interesting implication, which is, as a player, if you skip through all the dialogue and you just kill people without listening to them, then you have no idea what's going on in the story, because you don't have any, you don't want to dig deeper. And so the character in the game will also not know what's going on, because he hasn't listened to anybody talking. So you're really always on the same page as the character.
Yeah, and then who knows, like, what could happen towards the end could screw yourself over.
Yeah. And there are a lot of little payoffs in the dialogue system as well. So certain things that you'll say in the second or third level will actually come in and pay off, like, seven or eight levels later. Characters from early on, the things you say to them will be brought up again. I mean, it's a game that really feels like the choices that you make matter.
Exactly. Now, one question I have is about, like, after you complete a level, it shows, like, what happens in, like, a replay.
Yeah.
Is there a reason behind that?
Yeah, so the idea is the main character has precognition and can see the future. So whenever you play through the level, you're not actually going through killing people, dying, but you're just planning a course of action using your precognition. Whenever you die, your character says, no, that won't work, which means that that plan of action won't work, so you go back to try something else out, which is where the rewind effect comes in, of you going back to try something else out. So at the end of the level, you see this security cam footage, which is you actually going and enacting that final course of action that you had planned.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Very cool. So you're very close to releasing this, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Within the next
April 18th.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
A lot closer than I thought.
Yeah, very soon.
So for my listeners, why should they go out and pre-order Katana Zero?
Support the developer.
Honest answer.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I spent 6 years making this game, and I honestly think that people have loved it so far, and it's not going to be a toss-up. If this is the sort of game that you're into, and you pre-order it, you're honestly not going to be disappointed.
Awesome. And which consoles and PC is it going to be coming out for?
Switch and PC, yeah.
Switch and PC. All right, awesome. Justin, thank you so much for joining me here on B3. Katana Zero in stores and on eShops or wherever on April 18th.
Party's over. それでも踊りたかった 眠れないか情熱の日はいつしかいつの日にか鼻から気づいているホムラはいつか消える何も言わない。
I'm coming to you from the Indie Mega Booth with Samuel from Serenity Forge, who is showing off his upcoming game, Half Past Fate. Welcome to Boston Bash Brigade. How are you doing today?
Thanks, I'm doing good.
So tell us a little bit about Serenity Forge.
They started several years ago. I started working there about a year ago, though, when this project started. We've done publishing for smaller developers as well as our own development. Recently, we developed the Kingsbird that came out on consoles pretty recently.
So tell us a little bit about Half Past Fate. Where did the inspiration for this game come from?
We wanted to make a romantic comedy game, which wasn't something that we had really seen before. So we looked at a lot of romantic comedy like shows and movies. We wanted to explore that through like an adventure game.
So kind of like the old like Tom Hanks, Meg Ryan kind of movie, but made into a video game.
Sure.
So tell us a little bit about the story behind Half Past Fate, because you were telling me earlier that it's a couple of storylines that intertwine, correct?
Yeah, so there are three couples whose story develops over the course of the game, and we really wanted to have the player play as both sides of each of those couples. So you play as six protagonists throughout the game, and side characters in one story might be the main character of another, and you'll kind of see as characters develop through other characters' story.
So technically, like, the best friend character of Cade could actually be a character that you play, like, in one of the other storylines.
Sure. Actually, in this level, if you want a little bit of a spoiler, the last person in line, Bia, is one of our other main characters.
Oh, okay. So you're going to see what happens with her. The person that you helped give change to.
Yeah.
So your kindness later on in the game may actually help her out later on in the future.
Sure. And her story actually starts 8 years before this point. So we actually jump around in time quite a bit, too. One of the stories takes 8 years to develop, and one of them happens in 8 hours.
Wow, so you're trying to showcase, like, how different relationships can blossom from person to person.
Right, yeah, we kind of have that very quick, snappy story, and then we have a story that takes, you know, many years to develop, and we kind of wanted to show a diverse selection of how romances can develop.
Did you and any of the other developers take their own personal stories into to consideration when creating these characters and the plotline?
I'm sure they have. To be honest, I'm not part of the core writing team, and this game has had a lot of different writers involved, so everyone has brought a little bit of their own personal story, but it's not directly based on one person's story.
games?
Still, you know, I just finished playing the demo for Half Past Fate. I think it's really cute. Looks really sweet. Do you have a time frame as to when this game may be released and where it may be released?
It'll be released later this year on PC and consoles. And I can't be more specific, unfortunately.
Don't worry about it. I have all the consoles, so I'm okay either way. But Samuel, thank you so much for joining me here on B3 Half Past Fate, coming soon later this year, right?
Yep.
And thank you very much. Hope you have a great PAX East, and I hope you get a lot of buzz on this, because this was really cool. I like it.
Thank you.
Woman, don't you know what I'm suffering from? Ease my pain, make it wash out with the rain. Relieve me and put it up on your tail. Take it away and give it to somebody else. 'Cause I know
we are now coming towards the end of PAX East 2019, and I am so happy to end this episode with a fantastic bunch of guests right here from SNK showing off Samurai Showdown. I'm so happy to welcome Nobuyuki Kuroki and Yoshiyuki Oda, and helping to translate Mr. Joshua Weatherford. Welcome to Boston Bass Brigade. How are you guys doing today?
Doing good.
よろしくお願いします。
最高です。
He's having lots of fun.
Yeah, so you've been here at PAX East this whole entire weekend. What has been the feedback from the fans regarding Samurai Showdown?
こちらが思っている以上にいいフィードバックが返ってきてて、楽しんでいただいてて嬉しいです。
Yeah, I mean, he thinks there's positive response more than he even expected, and everybody's having a lot of fun, so it's been great.
It has been a really long time since we've had a Samurai Showdown video game. I know a lot of fans have been clamoring for one. What made now the time to bring it back?
Yeah, I mean, as you said, definitely the fans definitely requested it most, and we wanted to meet those expectations, so that was one of the biggest reasons. And also, he personally just wanted to make a game in the series. He's been working at SNK for a long time, but he'd never really been able to lead the charge and make one. And also, he just feels in the SNK library overall, it's very one of the most iconic and distinct IPs out there.
Absolutely. You know, they just had the 40th anniversary. They released the SNK 40th anniversary collection. And although Samurai Showdown itself wasn't showcased, it did showcase just how grand and spectacular SNK has been towards creating some of the most iconic video games out there.
Yeah, I worked on that project more than these guys, actually. And yeah, it was a lot of fun, you know, digging back and seeing even a lot of games I don't know, because a lot of that stuff was from the 70s, like pre-Neo Geo.
Yeah.
And even, you know, when I grew up as like mid-80s kid, like, didn't really see that many arcades, and like, especially those kind of old arcades. So there's a lot of stuff that I never even known about that I was playing whenever I was making that collection and helping make it with Digital Eclipse.
That is fantastic. So, Samurai Showdown, bringing it to these current gen consoles, what has been some of the challenges of updating it for the 21st century?
やっぱりデザインを新しくするっていうことと、シャルロットとか、ああいう感じ。あとは遊びやすいゲーム性にして、初めての人でも入りやすいようにしました。
Yeah, I mean, the challenges were definitely maybe some of the redesigns on characters where they wanted to make them fit the 3D aesthetic better. And also just trying to make sure that it was staying traditional to the roots and was still a very easy game for newcomers to jump in and have fun with.
Well, it is easy for newcomers, but I wouldn't call it easy.
No, you got it there. It gets pretty mean pretty quickly.
Yeah, because as you had pointed out, like, it's not a combo-friendly game. It's a game about precision. And so bringing this to, like, the new fighting generation, like, how have, like, the fans and how have, like, newcomers to Samurai Showdown felt about playing a video game that is more, or rather a fighting video game that is more about taking one's time instead of trying to do the whole button mashing thing?
Yeah, I mean, for him, he definitely thinks that looking at how the fans are reacting, how they're playing the game, that they can tell that it's very different from everything else that's out there. And, you know, the tenseness of the battles really comes across. And I think everybody's having a lot of fun playing it and really noticing how different it is.
Absolutely. Even though I lost every single time during this game, I can still say I had a blast playing Samurai Showdown. So we're coming close to the release, I believe, June of 2019. So very close towards the completion of it. What are you hoping fans will be surprised with when they play Samurai Showdown this summer?
やっぱりまだ発表してない新キャラとかそういうところもそうだし今後 の, あ の,、まあ、あの DLC とかそういう辺の展開も聞いたら驚くんじゃないかなと思います
Yeah, I mean, for him, we still haven't revealed all of the characters in the game. There's still a couple of brand new characters that we made specifically for this game that we're saving to show off. And he thinks there's going to be a lot of fans of these new designs and play styles. So he's really looking forward to seeing how that comes across.
And I, too, am very much looking forward to seeing what's going to be happening. Guys, thank you so much for joining me here on B3 Crew. Samurai Showdown coming this June to PS4 and Xbox One. It is going to be one hell of... Well, I don't want to call it a slobber knocker. It is going to... There'll be mini cross swords, maybe, perhaps. Arigato gozaimasu.
Thank you.
Some battleground days, some nights. Some live, some die in the name of the samurai.